too much about Stephen, because the reason we're having this presentation today was that Stephen put the schedule of his itinerary for Australia on his website, and all of a sudden we had everyone ringing us up saying, can we get in? And so this presentation today has really been made available because of the significant interest that was generated through the fact that a lot of people already know about Stephen and know about his, certainly the Old Daily, which is his weekly news service. So look, I'm not going to say too much. Stephen's actually probably seen more of Australia than we have over the last week, and I think over the next week. But Stephen, welcome, and we look forward to your presentation, which is the future of online learning and knowledge networks. So I'll leave it to you. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, and thank you to all of you for insisting that this session exists. I'm really happy to be able to do a session that's open to the public here in Adelaide. And one of the neat things, you take this home with you, Adelaide now, because of you, has something that Sydney and Melbourne don't have, and that's a talk by me.
Stephen, I did forget to actually say something, so I do apologise for this.
No problem.
We ran a session earlier this morning that we didn't quite finish, and we're going to actually finish it at 12:30. How many people have to go at 12:30? So we've got a number. So Stephen, I think what we'll do is we'll try and go through this one a little bit more quickly.
Right.
And then what we're going to do is actually allow staff within the company to come back at 12:35, because they actually missed out. Well, it's just getting interesting, actually. A bit controversial, I think. We actually want to have an opportunity to come back. So I think what we'll do is we'll try and finish this one off if we can.
This one will go faster because it won't be the carping from the back row.
Just kidding.
Where was I? And yeah, it's kind of neat because my project for today was to do two sessions, each 1 hour long, and one for the staff here, and then one that would be public, and they were supposed to be the same talk. And that never happens. So, for one thing, staying to within an hour. I don't know what I was thinking. And then doing the same talk twice in a row. I don't remember what I said before the break. So you'll get a fresh version. And the thing that's on the top of my head right now is the thing you... I'm assuming most of you, if not all of you, read my newsletter. How many of you do? Okay, a good number of you. Just for the record, it's called OL Daily. And people call it everything under the sun, as Gary just called it, OL Daily, which is not incorrect, because, of course, who hears me say the name? Many people call it OLD Daily, which I find is kind of interesting. And I just had a complete brain cloud when I named it. Utterly no imagination whatsoever. Although I think my titling was influenced a little bit by something called Arts and Letters Daily. It must have influenced me, if only subliminally, because my newsletter was a very similar sort of concept. Except better. No, just kidding. The thing that's on the top of my head right now, and it's almost been a theme. And Gary's going, wait a sec, this isn't your talk. of the talks that I've been doing throughout Australia, and I have seen an awful lot of Australia already. I've seen the north and east part of it. So now I'm working on the south and the west, so which is pretty cool. Is the new affordances enabled by things like RSS and blogs and wikis and things like that, because they are representing what is, in my mind, a new paradigm of online communication, new paradigm of online knowledge management, and not just that, but a new way of looking at how all of this stuff should be organized. If you look at RSS, RSS stands for, well, there's no agreement on what it stands for. Some people, including myself, say it stands for Rich Site Summary. Other people say that it stands for Really Simple Syndication. All it's intended to be is just an XML file that describes the contents of a website where those contents change on a regular basis, such as a newspaper website or something like that. RSS is hugely popular. There are 4 million, 5 million, I don't know how many. Nobody knows how many anymore. RSS feeds, that's what the files are called, they're feeds, out there on the internet. And we know this because there are some services that read these feeds or harvest from, and they count the number of feeds they harvest, and they count, you know, 4 million or so. And Technorati is one. They just went over 4 million this week, so that's why I'm using that number right now. There's no centralized standards body for RSS. There are a few, not one, but several convoluted, acrimonious, flame-filled discussion lists with personalities and insults and the sensitive sorts. But there's no standards body. There's nothing like a standards body. RSS is not part of the World Wide Web Consortium. It's not recognized by them. It's not authorized by them. It's not authorized by anybody. Nobody owns RSS. Some people think they own RSS, but you know, it's gone way beyond that. RSS isn't even always RSS. Sometimes it's something called Atom. But it works. And it works fabulously because it's small, it's cheap, it's fast, it's loose, it's out of control. It's everything e-learning isn't. And so, when I talk today about the future of online learning and knowledge networks, it's from having a history, an unfortunately long history, working within this absolutely chaotic network. I've been involved in RSS since 97, when it first came out. In fact, it was developed by Netscape, believe it or not, as a way to get content into a website, personalized website called NetCenter. And so, you know, newspapers and Wired News and various newspapers, and that, they would all have feeds that went into NetCenter. My feed was Netscape feed number 51. So I obviously outlived both the company and the website. My feed continues to this day. So I come at it from that perspective. I also come at it from the perspective of not having any money. The e-learning I do needs to be done often on my desktop. If I have a server, it's something I've scavenged from the back room. I work a lot. My history is in colleges. I've worked with small companies. I've been on my own for a little bit. Not very long because, you know, I like to get paid. I'm not really an entrepreneur. So you know, it's catch as catch can, right? But the thing is, and I did say this morning, you know, like e-learning has been about, and I'll say this in a few minutes, the large organizations, the colleges, the universities, IBM, Microsoft, Lotus, Cisco, SAP, and all of that, but the bulk of people, the bulk of the economy, and the bulk of learning exist outside these large institutions. These institutions are, as they say, the low-hanging fruit. But when e-learning has a large and substantial impact, it will be when it moves beyond these limited domains and into the world of people who actually, I've actually done this. Keep their computers together with duct tape, and have to put string around the mouse so it won't fall apart and stuff like that. That's the world of e-learning that I live in, and quite honestly, because I'm sure I could have gone and worked for Microsoft or whatever, it's the world I'd much rather be in. It's the world where I'm home. So, oh right, yeah, you're doing the slides. So now we'll actually. This is going faster.
You're in the way this time. That's what. There we are.
All right. So I come in here to education.au and map out what there's... No, I'm just kidding. But here's the world of e-learning. I mean, you know, you guys are in the field, and you know this, right? Learning objects, small little nuggets of self-contained learning, does everything for you, gives you the objectives, gives you the content, gives you little pop quizzes, washes the dishes, learning objects. And, of course, learning object metadata, this highly structured, very structured, 87 or whatever field method of describing learning objects that will one day give us a finely grained faceted search. Learning design, organizing our learning so that it's presented to the learner in a nice flow, you know, everything from simple sequencing to branching and so on. Learning as a play, where the student is a player and the instructor is the director, and they fit into roles, and the content is presented and is presented and is presented and is presented. Enterprise architecture, the learning content management system, or the learning management system, or the learning / learning content management system. My coffee. large enterprise-wide applications that hook into the staff information system and hook into the water supply and so on and so forth. Common services, there was I hope you had the chance, because you were right here, to go to the conference that was held here just a few weeks ago. I did talk about it in my newsletter. I talked about this model and the common services and all that. I had, well, as I styled them, the usual crowd who have even more frequent flyer points than I do, talking about this and the common services, the web services, the layered infrastructure, the tightly bound set of applications. Web services is huge. Everything's going to be done with web services. So all of these programs will talk to each other. They'll synchronize. Resources will be shared. But shared with constraints, because also in this model is the commercial orientation. E-learning is something that will be produced by companies like Microsoft and Disney and AOL, Time Warner, and packaged and bundled, which is why we have the IMS packaging specification, so that you can take the stuff, slap it on a CD-ROM, send it down a pipe, zip it up so that it's, of course, unreadable by a browser. Institutional purchasers, site licenses, statewide licenses, national licenses, digital rights management, lock it down, make sure you can't copy this stuff without permission. That's e-learning. That is the current consensus. Or as someone said in the group this morning, that is the orthodox view. That is what the world is developing right now. Organizations a little bit, I'm not sure how much to say this now, but I will say it, you know, education.au, Learning Federation, Merlot, in the United States, Advanced Distributed Learning, which is pushing hard, in Canada, EduSource to some degree, Industry Canada, there's the e-learning federation that people have been talking about, which is a multinational kind of thing. There are other initiatives. Is it public yet?
Which country?
Globe?
Yeah, Globe's coming.
Globe? Even if it wasn't public, you would have heard about it. Which is a consortium or organized, I don't know whether to say consortium or organization, of various providers such as Edna, Merlot, Industry Canada, so on and so forth, EduSource. This is the picture. This is what we're getting. This is what's being delivered. My own take on it is that this is a bad picture, and that it misses the mark on a number of levels, and that it's not what teachers want and need, and it's certainly not what students want and need. I mean, just think about one dimension of this. Out there in the marketplace, ask yourself, How many people are sitting there in their homes, in their living room, and saying, gee, I wish I had DRM access control technology right now. So, all right. So let me pick it apart piece by piece, because I like doing that. Well, I don't like that. Sorry. Oh, get in the way with us. All right. But as I stand here and slam and criticize, keep in mind, I do have an alternative picture. I'll get to it a little bit before the break, but if you can possibly stay after the break, think of it as bonus content, because there is an alternative picture, and it's one that's a lot more robust, and it's one that I think really does represent the future of e-learning. But let's look at this consensus or orthodox model for a moment and look at the problems with it. And the big problem with it, well, from my perception, is almost nobody likes it. There hasn't been a wide uptake. There is some use of learning objects, especially in the corporate military sector where they can force you to do things. But, you know, publicly, you know, people out in the public aren't really using learning objects properly, so-called. A little uptake in the schools. But learning objects aren't having the impact that people thought they would. As David Wiley has talked about what's called the reusability paradox, because the more precisely defined, according to learning object or learning objectives, a learning object is, the less reusable it is. And the more reusable it is, the less defined it is. So you can either have reusability or you can have educational outcomes. You can't have both. So this strikes some people as a fundamental flaw in the system. But there's more. The model, the enterprise systems, LCMSs, and all of that, it's a very high barrier to the use of these things. People sitting there in their living rooms aren't going to have an enterprise learning management system. It's not going to happen. Small to medium-sized enterprises, all of this technology completely inaccessible to them. Small schools, in Canada we got lots of schools, you know, like 50, 100 students, so on and so forth. They're not going to spend $300,000 on a learning content management system or whatever. But more. The system of federated search, let me just explain federated search a little bit here. A federated search is a system whereby you as a user put in a search at the search site, and then the search site does what can be called propagating the search. It takes your search and it sends it out to a bunch of other resources or repositories. And then each one of these resources at the end receives the search, processes it, sends the results back, and then the results altogether are displayed to the user. Now, you think about that. That means that if you are a member of this federation, you have to support every single search that somebody makes. Because anytime somebody puts a search in, it's going to be propagated to your server. So even if you only have a dozen learning objects, you're just, a professor working off his desktop or a small, medium-sized company, you're still going to have to handle this 1 million, 2 million searches a day. Can't be done. Who has that kind of computing power? Who has that kind of bandwidth? Federated search creates a significant entry barrier to small players. It massively favors large commercial or institutional organizations. Big problem. It is what I call a closed marketplace. Which is why big companies like it so much. Because big companies don't really want the competition. I slammed Java quite a bit this morning. I'll just skip lightly over that. Too big, too slow, compatibility issues, crashes a lot, and nobody can use it on the desktop, really. I don't like Java. I don't like the concept of Java. Java is a very good programming language. If you have a lot of resources, it's not a good programming language if you don't have a lot of resources. Web services have their place. but shouldn't be everywhere. There are many things that alternative data exchange formats can do just as well and 8 times as fast. Representational state transfer, for example, is the version of, if you will, of web services that's used in the RSS community. If you look on the internet for the acronym REST, just do REST RSS and you'll find all the stuff about that. And me, I'm happy for the most part with good old HTTP, the same thing that you use to send websites, because you can do just about everything with HTTP that you can do with web services. Not everything. There is a place for web services, but the entire system built around them, that doesn't make sense. But even more with this consensus market, is it's based on the presumption that we will live in a content for sale based economy, with producers producing stuff, getting royalties, making big bucks. You can just see, the whole talk of learning objects came out, and you know, I'd be in groups with professors and things like that. You could just see the dollar signs in their eyes. They're thinking, great. Now instead of making $800 of royalties on my best-selling textbook, I'll really rake it in with learning objects. And of course, that's not the case. The price of content is in the process of falling through the floor, falling through the basement. You read my newsletter. You saw the stuff I ran yesterday on the music industry and many of the changes happening in the music industry. The lead article was, you know, the price of music is dropping dramatically. We have Microsoft offering year-long subscription, all the music you want, $30. Right? So where are all the big royalties in music? And that's even before, that's only at the distribution end. We haven't even had the real crisis for the music industry yet. And the real crisis is when all the users become producers. I'm recording this talk. Here's a little $100 Sony microphone, free software, beautiful audio software called Audacity. Open source, runs on Linux, runs on Apple, and obviously runs on Windows. Only problem I've ever had with it was when I ran Internet Explorer, naturally. Otherwise, and I'm getting CD quality sound. I am now a recording artist. The melody's a little off. The beat is questionable, but you gotta love the lyrics. There is no market for content, which means that a model of e-learning based on that kind of content marketplace is fundamentally flawed. And then there are the DRM issues. There is no demand for digital rights in the world of music, except on the part of music publishers. There is even less of a demand for secured, locked down, password authenticated, IP authenticated access to a trigonometry lesson. Trust me, there isn't that demand out there for it. Who knows now when I go to the next slide?
Not yet.
So the analysis. I have 3 or 4 slides of analysis to draw out the underlying ways in which the current consensus is wrong. And the first part of this is the e-learning industry is, as I say, misreading the marketplace. And I touched on this a little bit earlier in the talk. Right now, the gains can be found at the enterprise level because corporations need e-learning. Universities and colleges and governments are buying e-learning. But this is the low-lying fruit. The real marketplace for anything e-learning isn't going to be at the institutional level. It's going to be at the personal level. And because that's where most of the people are, that's where most of the economic activity happens, that's where most of the learning happens. Additionally, as I just said, the market has dropped out, the bottom has dropped out of the content market, or is in the process of doing that, which means that the very thing that is being sold is shifting, and what is being sold is not content at all, but rather services. And to some degree, I say services, but to some degree, like hardware, stuff like this. There's a word for it I'm looking for, I can't find it. Durable products. In my newsletter at the beginning of the year, I came out with this slogan, which I've never used again. I thought it was a good idea at the time. Apple uses music to sell iPods. Apple does not use iPods to sell music. Apple takes a loss on the music. Who was it? I forget who it was. Somebody's selling music. Is it Sony? 49 cents a song. The royalties are 70 cents a song. But they sell the player. Because the money is in selling this. Services. Online mentoring with a real person is the sort of thing. Lifestyle. A lot of the universities, especially in the United States, their marketing focus has shifted dramatically from the quality of the learning to the greatness of the parties. Maybe not. That's an exaggeration. But to the lifestyle, the camaraderie. I went into an extended discussion of fraternities in the earlier session. The networking that happens. Those sorts of things. The services, content aggregation, interpretation, things like that will have a lifespan as a service. A limited lifespan. It's going to end at a certain point. But there will be a period of time where that sort of service will be something that can be sold. So on and so forth.
I'm sorry.
I guess I have four of them. The e-learning industry as it stands today is misreading the technology. It's sort of ironic to say this, but I think, you know, looking at it, that the people who are organizing the structure of our e-learning largely don't get the web, which is really ironic to say something like that. But what's being created are these large enterprise backbone, highly complex systems. But when you look at the technology, the technologies that have made a difference, that have caused a paradigm shift, they have been, basically without exception, small, individual, loosely connected, personal applications. Things like your email clients, things like your web browser, things like the web server. The web server is, at heart, a very basic piece of technology, a very simple piece of technology. Instant Messenger is another good example, so on and so forth. These are the technologies that are making a difference to people. The large centralized systems overall have a dubious history. If you think about it, there are these commercials that are running on television, right? So-and-so, you know, the postal company uses SAP, or this airline uses SAP. I'm waiting. I hate repeating a joke, but I'm going to do it anyway, because I did it before in the other session. It's just never the same the second time. I'm waiting, and I will never see it. So-and-so uses SAP and likes it. Okay, still funny to say. I don't know, like, they're comedians, they do that, and they, you know, they have their routine and so on. I have no idea how they can do it. Because, you know, how do you say the same joke the second time? And because, of course, you already know how it comes out. So, I don't know. And that's why I could never be a comedian, because I would have to make up new material every time. And sooner or later, I wouldn't. Now, there are exceptions, right? Google is an exception. Amazon is an exception. These are pretty centralized, although, you know, their access and distribution models are very distributed, right? You access Google and Amazon through your web browser. But I still think that Google and Amazon are exceptions. I think that their current ascendancy is of limited duration, at least under the current model that they're using. I think that as information flow improves, more competition will emerge for something like Amazon. And I think Google is also very aware that while centralization has worked very well for it in the past, it's not going to continue to do so, which is why Google has done things like acquire Blogger. And Blogger has allowed for distributed, individualized content, and Google is now leveraging that both on the production end and also on the distribution end for things like its advertising through its AdWords program. So even though we can point to centralized successes, these successes are limited and they're short term.
Now, maybe because he's been getting in the way, it looks like that's the
everywhere I go, I'm in the way. I'll just do the talk from the back of the room. Actually, it's not, it's you that keeps moving. I also think that the e-learning industry is dramatically misreading the business models. You know, the shortcut way of saying it is they've never read the Clutrain Manifesto. The long-term way of saying it is they're still in the broadcast mode. They still think of themselves as content producers, publishers, and distributors. And the broadcast mode, well, it still lives. We still have newspapers. We still have TV shows. But it's under attack by the internet, isn't it? online journalists, if you listen in on the online journalist list, they are very threatened by blogs because you have bloggers covering the same events as a newspaper or a television show. They have more reporters, they're not getting paid, and they're doing a better job of the coverage. And they have more readers. InstaPundit has more readers than just about every U.S. newspaper that exists. Not all, but I think the Times still has a larger readership. So push still sort of exists. The broadcast model still sort of exists. But where the business models are changing is in what might be termed as pull or grassroots adoption, the term that's widely used in economic and business texts, sort of viral marketing, where people choose the things that they want and they bring them to themselves and they listen to the recommendations of their friends, and the marketing that happens isn't a mass marketing, but it's a message that's passed from person to person. Everything is small, everything is distributed. ICQ, which stands for ICQ, is an instant messaging program. If you use instant messaging, you're probably using one of the clones like MSN Messenger. I use ICQ, so the others are all just like pale imitations. Massive number of users, zero advertising budget. It was spread completely by viral marketing methods. Blogs, same sort of thing. You know, we never saw Disney or Time Warner come out and say, blogs, the thing you have to have. Never happened. Yeah. Right. RSS, again, like I mentioned, no standards body, no corporate support, no money, no organization, no sense, and yet huge. The most successful adoption of XML, period. It's a different marketplace now. And the marketplace is a marketplace of distributed adoption, distributed communication. It's a marketplace where people bring to themselves the things that they want rather than having things pushed at them. And just as an aside, even if it wasn't for the business model, pull would still be better than push. Because it turns out that when you put 1 billion people on the web, push becomes really problematic. Look at your email. Email is an example of push, right? Because the people out there decide what you are going to read in your email. You think about it, that's how it works. And the problem is the people out there have decided that you want to read all about, oh, I don't know, I'm thinking of the education at U filters here, so I'm going to be careful. enlargement and dating and da-da-da-da-da-da, fantastic business opportunities in Nigeria, and so on and so forth. Poor Alan Levine has been having a horrible problem in movable type as well with what's called comment spam. His comments are pushed. Other people decide what's going to be the content of a comment field. And you can't stop this. You can filter. I'll bet you I could get a swear word into your system. I'll bet you. I'd put money on it. I don't know how, but I could do it. I just sit there and I think about it. I'm sure I can get one in.
I'm not going to challenge you.
Yeah, because I have friends. it's simple mathematics, right? It's a lot easier to filter for what you want, which is a known finite quantity, than for what you don't want, which is an unknown infinite quantity. So pull is pulling what you want, rather than push, which is blocking what you don't want. The other major trend, and you already saw it on the slide, so I'm not telling you anything, except for you in the back row who can't read down there. Big change. And you think Napster was hard for the music industry? Wait for Audacity to hit. Audacity is the little software program I'm using to record this. It's open source. It's freeware. It runs on Apple. It runs on Linux. It runs on Microsoft. Anybody can create high quality, CD quality recordings using this. When people discover that they can record and distribute their own music, and when people discover that one person in Indonesia can play the bass track, another person in Scotland can add the bagpipe track, a good vocalist from Nashville can do the lyrics, and you can mix and match these things, who's going to buy albums? You have a lot more fun making this stuff than you do just listening to it. So the business model is completely wrong. The e-learning industry is misunderstanding convergence. And a big mantra, right? Hegel and Armstrong's net.gain push this to the hills. Communities of practice, online learning communities, vertical marketplaces, content that covers every aspect of the domain. This is the paradigm I was working in when I designed a site called Munimall.net. And the idea was that Munimall was supposed to be a one-stop learning information or resource portal for the municipal sector in Alberta. So the vertical market, right? We're going to slam this whole municipal government sector. It's still there. It was never the success that the original architects anticipated. And the reason for that was people don't live in single sectors. We're trying to reach a town manager out there in Leduc, Alberta, and the town manager, their job as a town manager is just one part of their life, which means that the technology, the websites, etc. that they use can't focus on the single sector. That's why they use the web browsers. The web browser will get them Amazon, it'll get them Unimall, it'll get them Google, it'll get them their favorite card game site, and so on. So the future of convergence isn't vertical. It's horizontal. The future of convergence isn't industry or sector. It's the person. Convergence will happen at the personal level, not the corporate or sectoral level. And the killer application, when it comes out, and it will come out, will be the application that converges the personal. I expect within the next year to see a single application that merges email, chat and discussion groups, RSS feeds, your files on your computer, and Google search, all in a single interface. It's going to happen. It's already in the process of happening. The new Mozilla Firefox that just came out, Firefox 1.0, incorporates RSS feeds. We're already seeing this. Just another aspect of this horizontal rather than vertical convergence. E-learning in my neck of the woods, which is New Brunswick in eastern Canada, is being seen more and more not as something that stands on its own, a sector isolated from everything else, but rather as a part of other sectors. The major initiatives and the major proposals that we've had for collaboration in e-learning have come from the health and medicine community. They see e-learning as part and parcel
of healthcare, and especially preventative healthcare and wellness and stuff like that, but also things like records management, so on and so forth. We're also getting inquiries from the e-government sector, because learning services merge with government services. I mean, and that's sort of the sense behind, too, the learning services and the employment skills, career training, that sort of thing. That's an example of that sort of horizontal integration. So the model has e-learning standalone. We'll set up separate networks for e-learning, separate standards for e-learning, separate systems for e-learning. We'll focus on institutions of learning. This model fundamentally misunderstands convergence. They're doing it vertically rather than horizontally. Next slide, please. It's totally different. Told you it'd be totally different. Same slides, same content, same person on the keyboard, completely different talk. That is the internet. Welcome to the internet. That's the way it works. I can't bobble and sell the previous talk because it would have made no sense here now. It's a different group of people. I don't know exactly who you are and all of that. I don't know where you're coming from. I'm working completely by like facial expressions and nods and things like that. It's a completely different talk. That's why it's neat and useful for me to come here to a place like this, because the communication has to go both ways. Learning isn't a broadcast. Learning is a conversation. The market isn't a broadcast. The market is a conversation. So, rethinking search. Am I going to catch up to even where I was?
I think you are, Stephen, but
okay.
Only just.
That's okay. I mean, for those of you who have to leave, there will be an audio track of the second part of this, the big combined session, and I still think it was useful content anyways, the time you were here. I say that very quietly in case it wasn't. All right. The orthodox consensus model is built around federated search, which I described a little bit sooner. I wanted to linger on federated search for the education AU crowd a bit, because they talk about it a lot. I'll step a bit more lightly over it here. The federated search, as I mentioned before, closes the market to small players. Right? If you're a small, medium-sized enterprise or a person just publishing learning materials on your hobby, you're shut out. It also, equally importantly, restricts options for searches. It's the flip side of the same phenomenon, right? If you shut out a whole bunch of content, then what's left represents a narrow range of choices. That's why the big companies like it, right? Because the big companies, when you're doing a search, and remember, they think they're selling content, you're searching for content. If what you're seeing is only the stuff that you're selling, these companies are going, great, that's what I want. Keep that free stuff out of the marketplace. Put the barrier really high. Make them all federated search. So that in order to put free content in the marketplace, they have to spend $100,000 on the computer system. I really do think that they think that way. I honestly believe that. Because I've worked with a lot of these large companies, and they are very genuinely concerned about competition from free content. And they'll couch it an awful lot of the time in the language and the dialogue of quality, and you know the rhetoric coming from Microsoft against open source software. It's almost completely on quality, which when you think about it is really ironic. But there is a large push to keep free content out of the marketplace. I spent 2 years in the EduSource project trying, by hook or by crook, to leave an opening somewhere in the network for free content. It was very hard. And federated search is inefficient and it's slow. Because you're doing one search, but it gets repeated in 100 different places, then you have to send it all back, and you're doing it in real time. I don't know if I'll get to... Okay, next slide, please. Right. I don't know if I'll get to the other point, but so I'll say it right now. This is, I didn't get to this in the previous session. The worst thing about federated search is that it's all about control. Control of a message. Because if you think about it, when you do a search on the federated search, the information that you're getting in real time is coming directly and only from the repository that contains the information. Right? So you do a federated search. One of the members of the federation is, say, Disney Learning Services. The search goes to Disney Learning Services. All and only the information about that resource is coming from Disney Learning Services. Now imagine we bought, anything, books, movies, whatever, that way. The only information we learned about a book or a movie or a car came from the producer of that car. Fundamentally flawed business model. Right? We have to have multiple sources of information about a single object in order to get a balanced view of that object. But the federated model restricts the voice that describes an object to only the producer of that object. Fundamentally flawed. Huge flaw. Because there can be no criticism. There can be only the metadata that the producer produced. And even in a world where the producer always tells the truth, but still wouldn't be enough. And of course, producers lie. Large companies lie. And we know this because we've seen advertising, and we know that the content of an advertisement is very different from the thing that we buy. Not always, but just enough. Here's my alternative picture. It's not just my picture. There are thousands, hundreds of thousands of people working on this picture. Probably more people working on this picture than on the enterprise model. It's just they don't have any money and they don't have any power. But this is the other picture, where metadata is created by the content creator and then harvested or brought in by a service called an aggregator. And the aggregator sits there and it pulls in metadata from many different sources. And then the aggregator twiddles with the metadata and then presents the information to searchers. So what happens is that for a searcher, the searcher is working directly with the aggregator. They can get a customized search from the aggregator. And the contents or the results of that search are the results of the metadata that was harvested from these many different companies or providers. It's the model Google uses. And this is why Google has had the success that it has, right? Google is inclusive. Imagine Google only harvested or only displayed search results from those websites that could pay out $100,000. It'd be useless, right? But Google gets information from every one of those websites. It organizes it through things like PageRank. And then it produces the results for people who access through Google. It's fast. It's like that, pretty much. It's much faster, orders of magnitude faster than federated search. It's inclusive. It provides better results. The slogan, the mantra is aggregate, repurpose, remix, feed forward. That's actually, that little mantra has an Australian flavor to it because I didn't come up with it until sometime between Canberra and Cairns. But it's the model that I've been on all this time, all along. And the proof is, it's already had major uptake, major adoption. I talked about RSS and the huge success that RSS is. In the academic world, there's another initiative called the Open Archives Initiative. And it's also based on the harvest model. Instead of RSS files, the institutions make their metadata available in Dublin Core. And they get a little application which actually does the delivery of the metadata, but strictly speaking, probably isn't necessary. And OAI has more than 3 million resources available. These are all academic papers, journal articles, things like that, provided by something like 345 institutions. These numbers, of course, change daily, so take the number. If you wait a couple months, it'll be higher. So
don't take these numbers as gospel. That's what it was the last time I looked. So there's more, even in academia, there's more stuff being distributed through the harvesting method than through anything like federated search, institutional enterprise architecture, and so on. And of course, all of this software is free. OAI is free. Everything is free. You don't have to pay $300,000 to make this system work. Because the system doesn't require you to buy all the software. All you need to buy is the little bit, the little piece that is your connection to the network. And all the work that is done by the network.
How are we doing on time?
We're going to have to actually stop here.
This is perfect. This is exactly where I wanted to stop.
Not quite exactly the same spot to us.
Yes.
Yeah, I did a wee bit different, but... okay, we're going to stop here. I'm going to save my file. I'm going to zip outside for a cigarette, right?
Yes, you can.
And then we're going to pick up with the new model, and that's where everything gets really interesting, because there is another picture.
Okay, thanks, David. And look, it's unfortunate for those who do have to go that we